Also available on iTunes Podcasts, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Fahima Sek, and the show is What's at Stake. And today my guests are Enola Erd and Chandra Roxanne from the Community Healing Network. We will be discussing emotional healing circles and reparations and a whole lot more. Thank you so much, Enola and Chandra, for joining me today on What's at Stake. Now, Enola, you were the founder and the president emeritus of the Global Healing Network. Can you tell us a little bit about the genesis of the Global Healing Network and its inception?
I am the founder and president emerita, Elder Griot, of Community Healing Network. The Global Circle for Reparations and Healing is an entirely different organization, which Community Healing Network is a part. But let me tell you a little bit about how I got into this work at the Community Healing Network and then at the Global Circle. I don't know how many years ago it was, but I was much younger than I am now. And my husband and I were in a nightclub in Washington, D.C., and it was a small club, very intimate, and people were having a really good time. And there was a woman who was there, and we came to know her as Dee Dee because she was very active and very, very much alive and a part of the space. As the night wore on, Dee Dee became more and more inebriated. And my friend and I went to the restroom and met up with her there. And she, coming out of the stall, really very much unaware of our presence, looked at herself in the mirror and said, "Here you are, Dee Dee, old, black, and ugly as usual." I always tell that story as a way of explaining kind of the root for me, what got me into this, because I wondered to myself, how many people are like Dee Dee, not just in the United States, but around the world, how many Black women, how many Black men look at themselves and say, "I don't quite measure up." And I wanted to understand that phenomenon. I wanted to get rid of it because I love Black people. And the notion that there would be any number of Black people who would look at themselves in the mirror any morning and not see how truly beautiful and what an addition and how much value they add to this world really hurt me. And so began to think about it and read. And I came across a number of pieces of work that helped me to ground myself and lead to the establishment of Community Healing Network. Number one was Dr. King's last speech to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in April of 1964, where he talks about the fact that there are many things that we need to do as African Black people, but the most important thing that we need to do is to attend to this notion, the false sense of inferiority that teaches Black children to hate themselves, essentially, and the false sense of superiority that teaches white children to adore themselves is the word that he uses. And he talks about the fact that we will not be free until we reach down into the inner resources of our own soul and sign with pen and ink of assertive manhood, he says, we say peoplehood, our own emancipation proclamation. And so Community Healing Network is about that, doing the work to have us mobilize Black people, African people in the United States and around the world to do the work necessary to free ourselves from the 500 plus years of living in a world really driven by the lie of white superiority and Black inferiority. We see that as the root cause of the dehumanization of African people and the devaluing and the underdevelopment of Black communities worldwide.
Well, given the history of Black people globally, I think that this is an idea whose time has come. And I think I may have shared that with you when I initially embarked upon the Community Healing Network several years back. Chandra Roxanne, now you are the executive director of the Community Healing Network. How did you happen to become familiar with the Community Healing Network and then become the executive director?
Absolutely. I have my own story as well. So it was 2018, and I actually had just come back from a little bit of a sabbatical, like a four-month sabbatical in Europe. I had left my job in 2017 and was really trying to figure out what my next steps were. But interestingly, I was also really struggling with what it meant to be a woman, what it meant to be of African descent. And what became very clear to me even while I was in Europe was that while I might be traveling the world as a human being who enjoys traveling, the way that the rest of the world was receiving me was not as a human being. And so when I came back, I was in some deep struggle with this. And having not grown up in a pro-Black house, I never heard of Pan-Africanism or any of those things. I was in a real conundrum, and I ended up, I don't even know how I found out, but there was an exhibit called The Rise and Fall of the N-Word, and here in New Haven. And so I decided to go to that. And it was a weekend of events that was all designed around this exhibit. And so what this gentleman did, he was an artist, and he commissioned work from all over the United States, Black artists from all over the United States, to reimagine the N-word. The only colors that they could not use were Black and white. And so it was really fascinating to see Black artists from around the world interpret this, reinterpret it. And then we had a psychologist that came in and facilitated conversations around what sparked us. And there was this one image that really just cut to the throat, or cut to the heart. And it was an image of a water scene. It was underneath the water. And in the distance, you could see Black bodies falling into the water, but it was centered on a pregnant African woman. The chains were still on her arms and her feet. And I just looked at that and thought, while we are still seen as trash, discarded on the ocean floor. And so that sent me on my much deeper into, you know, grappling with this identity that I have. And someone said, you know, I found out about this organization called Community Healing Network. And for some reason, I think you are a good fit for what they're looking for. And so they literally sent my resume to them. I ended up speaking to Enola. I was preparing for the invitation and looking at the work that they were doing. I ended up speaking to Enola. And I remember Enola saying one thing to me. She said, "You're in my head." And so I ended up going to the next interview to speak with the board chair at the time. And as they say, the rest is history. And so something in me, in my own struggle, I won't even take credit for it. I would say God and ancestors, understanding that one of their daughters is struggling with who we have made her to be. And so I was gently guided to this organization and the work that they do. Started out as the outreach coordinator, became a certified EEC facilitator. I went through the process myself and worked for the Community Healing Network for about 4 years. I also received my degree in economics and ended up transitioning out to continue the work for our community, but on an economic and financial level as an investor. I had the opportunity of being asked to be a special ambassador in 2022. And so was sent to Ghana to make the case for emotional reparations. And that ended up being a very transformational relationship.
And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that journey.
Absolutely. And then I was invited to consider back to consider in 2024 becoming the executive director and leading to the next leading CHN to the next phase.
And Chandra has been an absolute blessing to Community Healing Network, to the movement for emotional emancipation and reparations. I couldn't be happier.
Well, it sounds like a fit, and it sounds like this was part of her journey, and it's a place that she was meant to be driven by the exhibit and then subsequently connecting with Community Healing Network. I'm Fahima Sek, and the show is What's at Stake, and my guests today are Eleola Erd, President Emeritus and founder of the Community Healing Network, and Chandra Roxanne, the Executive Director. We're streaming on 89.3 on your FM dial. And again, the show is What's at Stake. Now, Eleola and Roxanne, you can jump in here as well. The community healing circles, that's what I initially learned about with the Community Healing Network. It was at an event that you were doing this at the Congressional Black Caucus a number of years ago. Can you talk a little bit about how that came to be, or was that part of the work that you set out to do?
Yeah, absolutely. We were bold. I think I'm really proud of that. We set out to build a global movement for emotional emancipation, for freedom from the lie, this root cause of our dehumanization. And so, you know, what do you do when you're trying to do something that big? Well, you look first to the ancestors. You look first to what has gone before. And inspiration, of course, was to be found in the work of Marcus Garvey. I am an unabashed sister or daughter of Garvey, of that movement. My great-grandfather was a loyal follower of Marcus Garvey. And so I see myself very much in that tradition of being a Pan-Africanist, a global Africanist, we would say today. So, you know, one of the many wisdoms that Garvey shared was that we need to emancipate ourselves from mental slavery, because whilst others might free the body, none but ourselves can free the mind. And so inspired by that, and also inspired by bell hooks and her discussion in Rock My Soul, Black People and Self-Esteem, a book that one of the many books that she wrote, she says that Black people need places like AA for critical consciousness, that are where people are. And so that is where the emotional emancipation came from. That was the idea. How do you create spaces where we can, as African people, come together to understand our history, how our history has affected our emotional lives, our personal lives, our relationships, the state of our communities, and also to really, you know, continue to correct our miseducation, as Carter G. Woodson said, so that we understand much more clearly what happened to us and how we got here. And our analysis is quite simple. Africa existed as the first, the birthplace of humanity, as the cradle of human civilization, the richest continent on the face of the earth. And it was subsequently, a home of great civilizations, as Kip Gates tells us in his work. But because it was such a rich place, so many resources, it really became a place that people wanted to conquer, and in fact did. And in the early 15th century, the Catholic Church is petitioned by the government of Portugal to bless this effort to go into Africa and search out and invade and reduce into perpetual servitude the people in these lands, Africa. And it happened. It happened. The lie of white superiority and Black inferiority was the instrument for making it perpetual. So you say, first of all, these people are inferior to us. Therefore, we can dispose of them as we will. We can treat them as human property. We can do whatever we want with them. And because it's a lie that's going to just continue unless it's interrupted, it just gets transferred from one generation to the next. So we need to understand that as African people, we are the heirs to this lie. We're the heirs to many wonderful things, but it's also we're heirs to the lie. And the lie was what was used to pave the way. It was a kind of, I call it the ideological bulldozer that paves the way for the enslavement of African people, colonization of Africa, Jim Crow, apartheid, economic exploitation, and the unbroken oppression of African people for the last 500 plus years.
And this necessitates the healing part. And I know that Dr. Joy DeGruy is also working with you specifically in terms of repair and the healing that is necessary. Because ordinarily, when one speaks about reparations, folks are normally talking about being whole, but being whole also means becoming well. And I Absolutely. Do understand that it's up to us. And so I want, before we, you know, branch off into the other aspects, and because again, Dr. DeGruy coined the term post-traumatic slave syndrome, aptly so. So talk about, if you will, how that takes place. How does that occur?
Well, let me first of all say it's a pleasure and a joy to work with Dr. DeGruy. She and I co-lead the Healing Working Group of the Global Circle for Reparations and Healing. But let me step back again and finish what I was saying about the lie. The lie has never been challenged until now. The lie really has been transferred from one generation to the next, and it has done a tremendous amount of harm. It really has shaped the world's perception of us negatively, and it all too often shapes ourselves, our perception of ourselves. And so therefore, the need for healing. That kind of continuous assault on body, mind, and spirit requires healing. And we have never really, as a group of people, wherever we are on the continent or across the diaspora, really taken the time to say, hey, we've been wounded over the course of centuries. We need to heal. We need to be intentional about healing. We have done what incredibly strong people do. We keep going. We've been extraordinarily resilient. But it is now time to recognize that we've gone as far as we can go without that healing. So healing is central. And that's what the Community Healing Network has been working on through the Emotional Emancipation Circle, this small space where people can come together and do the work of healing. And I think Chandra is just brilliant at speaking about the details of that.
Yeah, I was going to come to that. I wanted to find out from Chandra. Well, first off, I want to say that you're listening to Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 on your FM dial. I'm Fahima Sek. The show is What's at Stake, and my guest is Anola Erd, the President Emeritus and Founding Director of the Community Healing Network, and Chandra Roxanne, who is the Executive Director. Now, Chandra, what does this look like in the community in terms of the work that you're doing in directing the agency and this process of our healing? What does that look like? How does that take shape and form?
Absolutely. And so what I like to start off by saying that, you know, we have this principle within our community, this African principle about Sankofa, like going back and getting what we may not have lost or remember or do not remember. And so I like to describe the EECs as that is embodied in practice. And so in working with our primary ally, the Association of Black Psychologists, we have a 9-week curriculum, a program called the 7 Keys of Emotional Emancipation, and then also an introductory and closing circles in which we walk people through those 7 keys and they build on one another. And each key has a corresponding theme to it, as well as resilience tools. So we are literally teaching our community tools that they can use to navigate hostile environments. And then, of course, each circle is a community. So our healing, we say that we are each other's medicine. And so this type of healing is not to be done in isolation. It is to be done in the community, in the village, in the space, with each other. And what is beautiful, what is very, very, very beautiful is to see how we began practicing the we-ness of who we are, that Ubuntu I am, because we are the Sawubona, seeing each other, feeling each other deeply, hearing each other deeply. And what is equally beautiful is while that healing is happening in the circles with, you know, people that may be African-American, our global circles, which we have virtually, you begin to see how the diaspora begins to heal, in a sense of we always hear from members of our diaspora outside of America talk about how they have been fed perspectives, very negative perspectives and stereotypes about Black Americans. And yet when they're in circle with us, they realize that none of that is true. And so there begins to be a repair of even the relationship among ourselves. And I would say even more beautifully is the adults that we work with, they begin using this information and the resilience tool with their children, and to watch the relationship between Black parents and Black children is also remarkably transformative. And you see not only that intergenerational healing happening, but you also see the need for not only Black adults to heal, but that they will take that on to their children. Because I always say to Black adults in the circles, there is no child-friendly version of anti-Blackness. They get the full brunt that we get. And so it is so very important that this healing is happening between the generations, and it does happen in the circles, and then also that is happening across the diaspora. And so it is a methodology, and we use the community, that communal methodology of being in community together to do this work. And also what's really lovely about it is that this methodology is also what we would say culturally competent, and also it culturally continuous. Thank you.
Well, going back to the post-traumatic slave syndrome that Dr. DeGruy conceptualized, the harm, it comes out in numerous ways. It comes out in terms of relationship, interpersonal relationships, substance abuse, how we treat our children, how we treat each other. And going back to Enola Ayers' encounter with that woman in the nightclub, our self-hatred of ourselves, and it also spills over into how we treat each other. And so I think this process, if you will, is something that is much needed within our community to help us heal and to restore and just be whole, healthy people, not to pathologize us, but what we've been through to a large degree has made many of us broken. And I'm also a clinician, so I've seen the impact in various ways, and it comes out in many different ways.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. We feel strongly that post-traumatic syndrome, the focus on the lie, it's essentially the same thing. We're coming at it from different directions. She's named it differently. I've named it differently, but it's the same thing. It's the emotional legacy of 500 plus years of assaults on the minds, bodies, spirits, on the minds, the dignity, the humanity of African people, right? I see the lie as the heart of the crime against our humanity, in that it undermines our ability to fully love and trust ourselves and fully love and trust each other. And part of the work of the Emotional Emancipation Circle is learning how to fully love and trust ourselves and to fully love and trust each other again. The great privilege that Community Healing Network had back in 2021, 2021 was to be one of about 23 organizations selected by the MacArthur Foundation to receive equitable recovery grants coming out of the horrible situation that had happened with George Floyd. You recall that that led to a great strike.
Yeah, the racial reckoning.
So-called. Indeed, we now know what that really was. But in any event, it did mean that these 23 organizations were brought together, given significant funding in support and recognition of the work that they've been doing to promote the human rights of African people. And we, 23 organizations, most of us stayed together because we wanted to say, okay, we have this recognition. We've all been working in the field. Let's figure out a way to work together so that we can support each other and learn from each other and make this bigger. And that is what led to the creation of the Global Circle for Reparations and Healing. Continues to be supported to some degree by MacArthur. There are people who are part of the MacArthur Foundation who are there. There are people who are in the reparations movement. There are people from Africa there. There are people from the United States there. There are people from other parts of the world there. Since then, the Global Circle has done the following. One, it has issued a presentment to the Roman Catholic Church, raising concerns and holding accountable the church for its central role in authorizing the transatlantic trafficking, but even more than that, even more perniciously, underwriting and supporting the notion of Black inferiority and white superiority, because that, in our view, is the thing. That's the thread that
runs
through.
It's at the core.
It's at the core, and it's the thread that runs through global systemic anti-Blackness. So we went to the Vatican, led by our colleague Cam Howard from Reparations United, issued this presentment in Rome. Secondly, there was a cross summit one on reparations and healing, which Chandra attended. Well, Chandra attends them all. I'm prohibited by my doctors from traveling internationally to certain parts of the world. So that first one, as Chandra said, she presented initially on the work that we've been doing. And then the second one, which was held this year, March of 2025, was Across Summit 2, focused on centering healing across global Africa. One of the things that we realized, and you pointed to this before when you're talking.
Okay, go on.
I actually lost my point.
Well, you were talking about the trip to the Vatican,
mm-hmm.
and the presentation. Could you mm-hmm. expand further on that? Because the Catholic Church has been horrific in respect to the transatlantic slave trade and their harm.
Well, yes. I mean, the good thing was that the Catholic Church, when confronted with this presentment, which I do commend to people. The presentment can be found at the Global Circle Reparations and Healing website, gcrh.org. We talked there about the ways in which various popes of the Catholic Church, through papal bulls, really laid the foundation for this ideology and gave it the support of the church, this incredible institution of religion. It gave it the imprimatur that this work, this horrible thing that was being undertaken by Portugal and subsequently Spain and other people, other European countries, was okay, was actually more than okay. It was really necessary because, you know, the idea was you're going off to save these horrible people. They called them Saracens. They called them, you know, pagans. And the idea was to bring Christ to these people. In the process, they're bringing all kinds of other stuff and taking a whole lot, taking human resources, taking African people, and taking the very, very rich mineral resources that Africa has to offer.
And leaving them with the Bible. You know, it's interesting. I was not aware of the fact that the organization's involvement in pushing the Catholic Church in this direction. This was under the previous Pope who recently transitioned, because, you know, these were issues that were on the table, were being discussed, and it's very interesting to understand that your organization was involved in pushing them to make these changes. You're listening to Pacifica Radio WPFW 89.3 on your FM dial. I'm Fahima Sek, and the guests today is Enola Erd and Chandra Roxanne of the Community Healing Network. And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about Africa and reparations and how that discussion came to be. And we will resume that on the other side of this.
Peace. This is your social justice calendar for the week of Monday, July the 28th. Thursday, July 31st, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., there will be a book launch, Herbert Harrison, Forbidden Genius of Black Radicalism, located at Sankofa Books and Video, 2714 Georgia Avenue, Washington, D.C. Visit Sankofa.com. Friday, August the 1st at 6 p.m., Community Baptist Church presents Community Sing, Surviving Protests Through Music with DC Labor Chorus featuring Pam Rogers and more. Located at 904 Cedar Heights Drive, Maryland. For more information, call 678-900-7325. From July the 31st to August the 1st, the Black Farm Community Supported Agriculture CSA program offers fresh, locally sourced produce from Black, Brown, women-owned and values-aligned farmers with the intention of supporting healthy communities and sustainable agriculture by providing access to nutritious local fruits and vegetables for our communities. Visit dolgrocery.org. On Saturday, August the 2nd, from 2 to 4 p.m., the Crowned and Resilience Collective Community Day centered around the Crowned and Resilience Collective will be celebrating strength, unity, and transformation for the youth and families of Ward 7 and 8 in D.C. It will take place at County AME Zion Church, 903 Division Avenue, Northeast Washington, D.C. For more information, visit prolificvisionsllc.com. Sunday, August the 3rd, from 7 to 9 p.m., attend the Politics of Kenya, Colonial Kenya Discussion with Ali Badwa and others at Sankofa Books and Video, 2714 Georgia Avenue, Northwest, D.C. Visit sankofa.com for more information. The WPFW Social Justice Calendar connects you to grassroots activism in the DMV. Submission can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. This is due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. Thank you always for all of our listener sponsors, and know that the Social Justice Calendar helps build a better world one broadcast at a time. Peace.
And ships minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, emancipation. liberate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs.
And we're back. I'm Fahima Sek, and the show is What's at Stake. And today we are with members of the Community Healing Network, Enola Erd, President Emeritus and Founder, along with Chandra Roxanne, who is the Executive Director. And I know that the United Nations is focusing on reparations and healing. The African Union is focusing on reparations and healing. I think their goal is 2036, I believe. But I know that the UN formed the People's African Ancestry, Permanent Form People of African Ancestry, and they've had conferences, Geneva, Switzerland, and recently in New York this year. I know you had the opportunity to attend this year in New York City. Is that correct? The UN's, yes. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, both Chandra and I attended. So the UN Permanent Forum for People of African Descent is related to, comes out of the decade, which was the decade before this one, the first decade, which was declared by the UN to be the decade for people of African descent. A very important period of time in history, I think, where African people began to say, you know, our claims on the world's attention, our claims for reparations, our claims for justice and fairness and human dignity deserve to take center stage. And that was the idea, I think, of the first decade. And now we're in the second decade because they've extended it. So this is the second decade for people of African descent, a time for real mobilizing around issues having to do with African people. I must say I was somewhat, I wasn't impressed. I didn't, and when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, what's that going to do? But it really has been a galvanizing opportunity that has brought people together from across the continent and the diaspora. And so I'm very grateful for it. So we're in the second decade. So in addition to the decade, there was the establishment of a permanent forum for people of African descent to continue to take up the issues. Think about it, you know, the continent and African people have really been devastated by the actions of these forces of history. And this is now a time for reckoning and a time for really assessing the damage and a time for us to finally assess the degree to which we as African people have been wounded, and how do we heal that wound, and how do we make recompense for the harm and the woundedness that's been caused. So the UN has established itself as a forum that allows us to come together and have those conversations. So going, it was in April, I think, and we had a good opportunity to talk about these issues, to present healing as an essential aspect of reparations. We call it a Community Healing Network. We call it emotional reparations, dealing with the emotional and psychological damage that has been caused by enslavement and colonization and all these other systems of global anti-Blackness. And Chandra was...
Well, you know, it started at the UN Conference Against Racism. I did have the pleasure of attending, at the time, I was the founding co power of in Cobra. And the two things that came to the Durban Declaration was, one, slavery was a crime against humanity. Now, I know, Chandra, you were there in Ghana, I believe, when they had one of these meetings. Can you talk a bit about that?
Absolutely. So I was able to attend the one that was in 2022 and then the one that was this year as well. And so the first one, what was really beautiful was the ability to make the case for emotional reparations, even what that is and why it is so important. And we were then able to walk delegates through just a taste of what we offer. And, you know, we talked through about, or we worked through just the lie. And this is something that comes up a lot in our circles, but they were able to experience not just the words that are said to us, but what comes up in us. And so what is so very important in this process, you know, particularly those who are leading this reparations movement, is that we have to undergo our own healing. And part of that is being able to identify the emotions that come up from these lies. And it's really interesting because we only have people, adults, do this for maybe, only had them do it for like maybe three minutes. And the sheer rage that some people experience, or sorrow that some people experience, is eye-opening. And the ability to actually say that, to actually give name, because as human beings, we have a range of emotions, but we only know about three. And many of us who are navigating these systems have become hardened. And so if I've become hardened in trying to navigate, there is no way that I am going to be open and soft to people of my community. And so that simple act of being able to identify the lies that are said about us, and then to be able to begin working through, but what does that bring up in us, the emotion, so we can begin to name it and begin to move through that. Yeah, or just become aware of our humanity, because the way I describe it is that what you're feeling, that is your humanity screaming for attention, and it needs that healing. So that was the first time. That was the first one. And then the second one, what was really beautiful, as everyone there, the Centering Healing Summit, this was a very, just like the first one, a curated event, really focused on those that are working more acutely on the healing aspect. And what was really beautiful is one of the things that kept coming up is the need for trust and the need to repair and build relationships among ourselves. And so my co-facilitator and I, we actually took what we were hearing from the conference attendees, and then we created, and I have to say so myself, a very beautiful workshop, 5-hour workshop around trust. What does that mean? We're all coming from different perspectives. You have some from Brazil, you have some from Europe, you have some from the continent, you have some from America. And so, like, let's explore, what does it mean for us to build trust? And number one, are we even talking about the same thing? Is English even the language that we need to be using? Is it enough? And so it was really beautiful to actually, what we did is we separated people into their respective regional groups, and we asked them, so in your culture, in your context, what does trust look like? How is it built? What are the phrases and words and gestures and things that you identify with as the trust building tools? And it was eye-opening, just getting around. First of all, unpacking all the different ways in which people throughout the diaspora identify with trust, build trust with each other. And then, of course, now that we have all the different perspectives, how do we harmonize it so that we are all focused on the same thing? And what was also really beautiful was that on the continent, I mean, the those that were from Africa, of course, you know that Africa is a very diverse community in and of itself. And to see all of the different names and words that they use, that there actually isn't a literal translation of trust. But one of them explained that the way we operate is that it's what you would call trust It is, we put our heart on you. And so right from the beginning, you don't have, it's not something that you earn from their perspectives. It's something that you're given because you are a human being. And it's only after the fact that when something has been done wrong, do they then have a word for a mistrust or distrust or broken, but it's not something that you earn. It is, as a human being, you are given, we, in their term, we put our heart on you. And so even thinking about that, about how we bring that back into our diaspora, back into our village, of putting our heart on one another as a way to build trust. And, you know, I will share that for one group in particular, they were very, very forthright in saying, you know, we actually don't have a culture of trust. It is a culture of distrust. And they couldn't come up with anything. And so even that was eye-opening. And so this idea of being able to rebuild trust among ourselves is so fundamental to healing. Because one of the things that comes up in our EECs is that what is done to us from people outside of the community, it hurts and it stings. And we're able to navigate that. But what we do to each other, that's what brings us to our knees and that's what takes us out.
Now, Enola, I know that you kicked off in Juneteenth the Global Circle for Reparations and Healing. And that was kicked off during Juneteenth. Now, and it's continuing. What does that look like?
Well, what we actually did on Juneteenth was to release in the United States the Centering Healing Declaration, the declaration that came out of the March 2025 Accra Summit 2, which was held outside of Accra, Ghana, Nyanyanor Village. This declaration, which your listeners can also find at the Global Circle for Reparations and Healing website, gcrh.org, really sets out a description of what happened, how we came together. This was a group that was convened by the Global Circle in partnership with the African Union, related to, as you said, its year of reparations, which is 2025. And it was meant to say that it is well past time for us as African people, wherever we are, to deal with the longstanding wounds that have been inflicted on us by others over the course of centuries. It went through a description of the summit and what we did, how we the questions that we put for ourselves. The questions were, you know, what has happened to us as Africans? We wanted to, again, delve into our history and understand our history from the perspective of African people, people on the continent, and people across the diaspora. And we had a very rich conversation zeroing in on the question of, you know, what was the role of Africans in the selling, enslaving, trafficking of other Africans. And we were able to understand that such complicity as there might have been, and this is what the declaration says, was a forced complicity. We really deepened our understanding about that. And in such a way, we're able to help ourselves come back together and give ourselves very rich intellectual foundation for further conversation about what actually happened. And then the next question was, how did what happened wound us? What was the nature of the wound, et cetera? And then the third question was, that we answered was, how do we heal from this wound? And as Chandra said, the conclusion was that a very, very big and most important step that we have to take is to rebuild trust across the diaspora. And we developed some strategies for doing that. We have a plan of action that came out of that summit that is really going to direct the work of the Healing Working Group of the Global Circle for Reparations and Healing, which I am really honored to co-lead with Dr. Joy DeGruy. And, you know, we've got our work set out for us. We've got our work plan, and we're just going to make sure that it happens. It's been 500 years since this lie took root, and it has really been allowed to exist without being challenged. And we're challenging it now. And that means for us that over the years, when people are in the struggle, always say, you know, the struggle continues. Well, for us, the struggle is ending, because we're ending it by addressing the most powerful weapon that has ever been formed against us as African people.
Well, one of the things I find this to be really so necessary and very important. One of my students in a class a few years ago had made mention of the fact that, yes, there were Africans that were taken and enslaved, but people lost families. And people on both sides were harmed. People's husbands, wives, and children were taken away, never to be seen again. And this is one of the reasons that there are those that pour libation at many of those slave forts for those ancestors. And in large part, many of us have returned. Their descendants have returned to those very sacred places. So this is something, I think, that is long overdue. And, you know, again, when I initially heard about the work a number of years ago that the Community Healing Network was doing, it was something that was so necessary. And I think it's necessary now, today, more so than ever before, particularly as the discussions go on about reparations. And also, while there are those are not well-meaning that are exploiting and using reparations actually in some instances as a divide to create conflict. So this healing is something that is so needed. You have no idea how pleased that I am that it's occurring, because I've been watching and I've been observing some of this stuff. I'm not involved with the reparations movement anymore, but in the 90s I was. I was part of the student chapter of NCOVRA. I was at the UN Conference Against Racism. Chandra, where do you see us going? Again, you kicked off on Juneteenth the global reparations healing with the declaration. So where do we go? How do we continue this? What is occurring and what needs to happen?
Absolutely. And so I can say that, you know, one of the things that CHN is focused on is really building out our EEC program. So one of the things that I have started to do, or I have done in my, I think I'm in my seventh month now, is I actually went out and I talked to the community here in New Haven and to hear their response to emotional reparations and what is needed. And I think for the first part is that there are sections of us that know about emotional emancipation, and then there's sections of us that don't. And what's been really interesting is to be in community with Black people who know nothing about CHN, and yet they come to their own conclusion that healing is necessary. And so we really want to build out our EEC programming, and we are starting with the youth of being able to adapt the adult program and to create something what we're calling the YGB, the Young Gifted and Black EEC, and making it appropriate for the 15 to 22-year-olds and getting that incorporated into various youth organizations and curriculums. And the reason why this is so very important is because our youth, that age group, they are still undergoing their developmental stages. And so to be able to ground the next generation in a sense of who they are, to give them the tools to navigate and also fight against the lie, is going to be very, very, very important for the future of the diaspora. And so it's very important. I would say, you know, Anola always says, our ancestors and our children and our ancestors are waiting. And so we really want to make sure that we are getting into the youth and getting Black youth saturated, I would say, in a knowledge of who they are through the EECs. But also there is a relationship there, you know, to have with the Global Circle, because what we want to do is really build out an infrastructure, a global infrastructure for healing that will allow healers from different perspectives to truly come together and to be able to share best practices, to be able to take what we're learning and what we're developing at the summit and bring it to the local levels, central to our global infrastructure for healing, is actually tapping into the methodologies from the African continent that are used, maybe that we don't even know about, that can fold into our infrastructure to ensure that it is truly that it truly has the cultural continuity that's necessary for African peoples. And so, like I said, there's both a local piece and focusing on the youth, but then there's also a global piece that is happening as well, and having that central infrastructure so that we can do our healing. Not just one at a time, but across the diaspora almost simultaneously is important. And I would say lastly is a global day of healing. We have global days for other things like Earth Day. And I think what we have been able to do is put forth a proposal that one way to begin building the trust and one way to begin unifying is through a global day where we recognize globally that it's time to heal. And it is so important that we actually have an annual celebration around healing and to build out with what that day might look like in different contexts.
Thank you, Chandra. Excellent. I think it might be a day. It might be a month. It might be that. And yes. That's one of the things. There are many different ideas. Community Healing Network has a day. It has a weekend, Community Healing Days. I know that Emotional Justice, which is based in Ghana, led by Esther Arma, also has a space and time, a whole month. And so we're looking, we need to come together generally and decide what would be best for us as a whole. But yes, this is the point. We're coming together. We're yes, coming together and saying, you know, people are doing things all over the world. This is why we know that the time has come, and there's nothing that's going to stop us. Nothing's going to stop our healing, because people in all different parts of the world are doing important things to help heal our people. The goal now is to make sure that we bring those efforts together through this infrastructure, global infrastructure, sustainable infrastructure, so that we have impact over time. This was not meant to be a one-off. The summit was not a one-off. It is intended to happen year after year after year until this work is done. So yes, as Chandra mentioned, an international clearinghouse of African-centered healing resources, toolkits for popular education, bringing our storytellers and griots together to create, to make sure that what has been started in Across Summit 2 continues, making sure that we have an outreach to healers across the diaspora to really understand. A big part of our healing as African people is moving from one way of understanding what it means to be human to another way of understanding what it means to be human. Is it the I think, therefore I am individualistic European point of view? I think, therefore I am. It's all about me, and I can use you in whatever way I need to get my, you know, to get what I want. Or is it because we are Ubuntu, a Sawubona? Mm-hmm. Are we interconnected as human beings, which is the African perspective, the more indigenous perspective? And in fact, what we're doing with EECs is helping our people move from the toxic I to the human,
inclusive we,
healthy we, because we are we people.
Well, I want to thank both you, Enola Aird, and Chandra Roxon from the Global Healing Network and the Emotional Emancipation Circles, which is something that is time has come. I'm Fahima Sek. This show is
thank
What
you.
To Stay.
Thank you, Fahima. We thank you.
Well, I thank you for joining in this, continue this very important work. Please stay tuned for the next show that will be coming up. And I want to give a shout out to our executive director, Verna Avery Brown.
From August 3rd through the 16th, during our summer pledge drive, we present WPFW, 48 Years of Centering Blackness. We'll commemorate Black August and celebrate not only the freedom fighters, political prisoners, and those who have perished in the struggle for Black liberation, but also the scholars, musicians, and poets whose work has served the Black liberation struggle. There are forces working to erase the contributions and significance of Black people. Your contribution ensures that WPFW is not erased and that the voices of Black people throughout the diaspora continue to be platformed here. Donations can be made anytime at WPFW.